What we want to know is what's happening for blind people, and we have a right to know. So if somebody has some information about programs that have effect upon us, they have a responsibility to come here and to tell us about them. And if we want to ask questions about it, they better listen up and they better answer those questions. And I don't care what form of entity you're dealing with. Are you creating a technology for the blind? Are you from a government agency dealing work with the blind? Are you from a program that excludes blind people? So let us suppose you're from the Army. We had some people here who had been in the Army today, did we not?
Yes.
All right. Do they let blind people in the Army?
No.
Why not? Somebody says you got to have 20/20, and do I believe it?
No.
Not a chance. So I was, as you, some of you heard yesterday, I was talking yesterday, and I said I was in Israel recently. And I was in Israel because I wanted to ask a company that was building access technology systems into cars for self-driving, and I want to be able to use those cars. So I went there, and I was talking to them about building it so that blind people could use it. Now, they didn't believe in me. They don't believe in the idea, but they've got over the laughing stage, let me tell you. What they're doing is listening whether they're going to build what I had in mind or not. And if they don't build it, do you have any idea what I'm going to do to them? Well, imagine it and you'll find out, but because I intend to have this technology available. But I was there and I talked to the Ministry of Justice while I was there. They have a Ministry of Justice and they have a minister who runs this department, and I talked to her. And I said, you have universal military service in your country, do you not? She said, yes. I said, do blind people serve? She said, well, they're not obliged to. Not obliged to, but they're welcome to volunteer. Now, I think that's a little weak there, you know. I think I'd have made, say, everybody serves, this means you. And then the big finger that points your direction, you know. Do blind people serve? Well, they can serve, and I tried to get into the military years ago, and I was told I couldn't come. And I couldn't come, they said, because I was a blind person. And somebody said, you got to have 20/20 vision. And I thought to myself, how many jobs are there in the military that require 20/20 vision? There are some, probably. But how many of them are there? Have any of you evacuated an airplane? Some of you have you? Sort of. Well, I did evacuate an airplane. I was in an airplane. It was not a crash, let me just say. I've never evacuated a crash. It was a simulation. And they filled this thing with smoke. It was not toxic smoke, I was pleased to say. It was just, you know, like fog, real thick fog. And the other guys had trouble getting out, but I didn't. Because you know how much I use my vision? Well, I don't have any vision. So I don't use it, but I get around. So they filled this thing with smoke, and they were afraid I was going to fall down. And I thought, you might fall down. This is unusual for you, but it's the everyday for me. And if you want to get somebody to get into a place where there isn't any vision going on and operate pretty well in that particular environment, pick me. I've done it a lot. And this has to do with the Federation philosophy, don't you know? Do I have talent? Yes, I have talent. Do you know how to use it if you're in the military? Probably not. You haven't thought about it. But I've got it, and I've got it in ways that you guys in the military don't know. And I can help you figure out how to use it, and you'll have a better military if I join up. I'm not volunteering today. Pass that. Somebody wants the floor. Who are you? Your name, you said?
Jim Hamrick.
Jim Hamrick? Okay, go ahead. Yeah, some people can't hear you.
Okay, we went somewhere with our daughter one time, my wife and I did. And I don't remember what the incident actually happened, but my daughter made the comment that she
October, you got 50. And she made the comment to the people around us, said, hey, if anything goes on in here and a national disaster or something occurs, I want to be with my parents, and they're both fine, and they'll find their way out of here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are a good many times when blindness is a disadvantage. No doubt about it. Just look around at all the print that people have. They love their print. They don't like Braille. They have a prejudice against Braille. I went to this country, you know, that has universal military service, and they don't have Braille on the elevators. Pain in the neck. I figured out how to use the elevator anyway, but it took a while. I figured the one that was on the bottom was the ground floor. It wasn't. It was below ground floor. Took a while to figure out how to get to the right place. Things like that. But they didn't have any Braille on the doors in the hotel. And I thought, you know, I could just go around and this was the kind where you put your key in the little slot. I could put my key in all the slots up and down this hall. And if somebody didn't jump out wondering if I was trying to break in, maybe I'll try some other method, I thought. Anyway, I got there. But it's harder if you don't use the right, the tools that you need. So we have a philosophy in the National Federation of the Blind that says we're going to get the right tools. And we're going to help people know that this world is a better place if the right tools are where we need them as well as where everybody else needs them. Do you know how much we spend on print in this country? Think about it. We have signs everywhere. On every street corner, well, not every street corner, but almost every street corner, there is a sign that gets put up, and that sign tells you what street it is. How much do those cost? And then they say to put Braille on in the elevator in a hotel is a special excessive cost because it's for the disabled. For blind people, how much did they spend on the other signs lying around this place? Which cost more? I tell you, I bet those ones with print cost more. We put up a sign on our building which said that we were the National Federation of the Blind, and we put it on top, and it was a big sign. It was 40 feet long, and it cost us $60,000. That was when it didn't light up. Then we put up one up there that lit up. That was more than $300,000. And we did this for the sighted. Did it cost us more than $300,000 to put the one on there that says National Federation of the Blind in Braille? Heavens, no. Of course, you do have to get closer to it. So, the people who say that these special things that blind people need, they're expensive, they're a pain, they cost money, and I mean, why do you demand all this special stuff for you? Well, it's just as special for me as the print sign is for you, and probably in the long run it's cheaper. So I'm unimpressed by those arguments. So what is the NFB philosophy anyway? I mean, I'm willing to listen to some ideas here. What is it? Yeah, Susan?
Yes.
Jones. The
average blind person can do the average job as well or better than the average sighted.
Part of it is that blind people have the capacity to do the ordinary job in the ordinary place of business as well as the ordinary sighted person. Susan said, or better. I think average to be about the same, you know. There are exceeding blind people who do better. And some blind people work harder than some sighted people do. So that characteristic means that they do better. Because the amount of desire and the amount of energy involved does matter. So, I agree that blind people have ability, and the ability is equivalent to the ability of sighted people. I think this is a fundamental of NFB philosophy. Is it the central fundamental? Well, it might be one of the central pieces of philosophy that we need. And you are? Frank Ricks wants to tell us something else. That's what he said. We do say you can live the life you want. Maybe. Shelton?
I think attitude only gets you so far. Like, you need the attitude, but there are barriers that we need to do advocacy efforts, there are barriers that we need to do prison interviews, like, I know some really positive blind people that have a lot of their way by no fault of their own. That's demonstrated by a lot of what we see. So I think that a core principle of our philosophy is that attitude, but I also think another pillar of it is that we believe that blind people are equal to sighted people. And right now we're in a state that's not the majority view, and that's why a lot of the legislative and advocacy efforts that we do.
Did everybody hear what Caitlin had to say?
Yes.
Okay, good. She challenges whether or not attitude is enough. And I accept that challenge, figuring that probably attitude is inadequate to get us where we need to go. There also need to be some skills involved and some determination and some organization. Are you looking for something special? Ron Brown, make a noise over there. Yes, who are you?
Florence
yes. McSwine.
Yes.
Florence, what's up?
Is it to level the platform for our nation's blind?
Leveling the platform for the nation's blind. Well, we do a lot toward leveling the playing field or the platform or whatever you want to call it. There have been a lot of people who talked about that. We got to level the playing field. I always like to try to tilt it in my direction if I can manage. But I've had it tilted away from me a lot in the course of my lifetime, so I don't think I'm too worried about tilting it a little my way when I get a chance. I recognize that getting the opportunities put together makes sense. How do you do it, Florence? I'm listening.
Through training?
You got to have training, yeah. Mm-hmm. Come on, Florence.
Awareness. Training.
Yeah. There's something else, Florence. Come on. Florence, you can do it.
Education.
Yeah, that's good. Education and training are aspects of the same thing.
Legislation.
Mm-hmm. There's something else, Florence. You know this, Florence.
Advocacy.
Advocacy. You're up to date, Florence. You know this. I'm listening, Florence. Anything else?
I know it takes money.
Yeah. Little money greases the wheels here and there. You got to have some of that. Is the money the most important thing? Yeah, it's important. It's got its value. But if we have the right...
We'll get the money. What else do you need, Florence?
Yeah, opportunity.
That's good. Yeah. How do you make them?
Well, I think Katie
needs to know. Florence. It's so good to have you back here, Florence. Had you in seminar the other while, you know? It was sort of the same. Let me point it out, Miss Clarence. Can you do this by yourself?
You can't do.
Can you do part of it by yourself?
Yeah, you can.
It takes teamwork. So what you need is some friends. You got to have you a bunch of friends. Now, this group goes by different names, doesn't it, Lawrence? Sometimes you call it your friends. And some people call it your gang. Got to have a gang. Sometimes they call it organization. And, you know, we call it the organized blind movement. Because the NFB philosophy says that we can change things, but very often we don't have enough talent all by ourselves and we have to get some people to help us. Now, NFB philosophy has one other element that is fundamental, in my opinion, that we haven't touched. Can you think of it, Florence? What? Florence says no, so she'll need some help here. That's why she has friends, because she's going to need help from time to time. And if one of you has some help to give.
Alex Gillen.
Alex Gillen. That, see, the front part of our message says blindness does not determine your future. It is not what determines what you are. It doesn't decide your life. And it doesn't establish the kind of person you are. So what we say is that blindness is... we said it in different ways during different parts of the Federation. In my growing up period, we said blindness can be reduced to the level of a physical nuisance. It's a characteristic. Dr. Jernigan put this together in a banquet speech, which was called Handicapper Characteristic, in which he said blindness was a characteristic, and he said everybody would agree with that. But when you go on to say it's nothing more than a characteristic, it's not a major element of your life. It's just one small piece. Lots of people would disagree with that. It's about the same as 100 of the other characteristics that you have. How tall you are, how wide you are, whether your wideness was recently acquired or had to do with your... genetic makeup... whether or not you have an intellect that is higher than 100 on whatever the scale is that measures it. All those various things. Whether you were born in the right spot, whether you had the right parents, all of that. The basic background of every human being is different. And that blindness is one of your characteristics, and that is all it is. It doesn't need to be more than that. Now, this, of course, is an important thing. But there's a fundamental piece of thought that goes into the NFB philosophy that you can find in the Constitution of the National Federation of the Blind. And what the Constitution of the National Federation of the Blind says is that the organized blind, that is, the National Federation of the Blind, has a purpose. Anybody remember the purpose? A good many of you are shouting words at me, but you're not telling me who you are. And Frank Rick said equality, opportunity, and security. And then there's somebody else who said achieve here. Who are you? Rebecca Blackburn, no less. All right. Well, what the National Federation of Blind purpose is, if you look at the Constitution of the National Federation of the Blind, it says it's to serve as a mechanism for collective action. And this is a fundamental part of the understanding of the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind, which is, when it started, it was so new and so different that people didn't believe it. Nowadays, those of us in the Federation take it for granted, although the people outside the Federation do not take it for granted, and they don't believe it. And that is, We run our own shop. It belongs to us. It's ours. We'll do with it whatever we please. And if we decide that we want to pursue something, we have the right to decide to pursue it. Nobody else tells us what our lives are going to be. We do that all by ourselves. We make up our own minds, and then we put our program together to get it done. So we, a few years back now, I said to some of my buddies in the Federation, because they're the people who know about blindness more than anybody else in the world, I've come to know this, and I don't question it anymore. There was a time when I questioned it. There was a time when I thought the Federation, I wasn't sure, knew what it was doing. And I wanted to find out whether it knew what it was doing. And I thought, you know, I didn't have doubt of me. I don't know why I didn't have doubt of me, but I didn't. I did not doubt that I could figure out whether the Federation knew what it was doing if I stuck around and asked enough questions. So I stuck around and I asked a lot of questions, obnoxiously so, some thought. But I came to the conclusion that the Federation does know what it's doing. And not only that the Federation knows what it's doing, but that it has a right to do it. And not only that it has a right to do it, but that it has a better right to do it than anybody else. Nobody else knows all that we know. We don't know everything we need to know. But there isn't anybody that has a better range and depth of knowledge than we possess, and a better right to decide what we're going to do. So we start with this. And you see, we live in the United States. And in the United States, we say, we decided to have a revolution against the tyranny of Great Britain. Now, you weren't there. I wasn't there. But we say this anyway. We say we believe in the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence is hundreds of years old, and we say we believe in it anyway. And there are lots of people who don't believe in it, but we in the United States hold it up to people as a recommendation. And the reality of why this matters is that those of us in the United States decided we were going to make a country, and it was going to be the kind of country we wanted, and the people in England couldn't do it because they didn't have the country and they couldn't make it the way we wanted it to be made. So we had a right to revolt and therefore to have our own country. Now, I believe that about the blind. We have decided to make our own organization and to bring it into being in the way we want it to be, and that means we have to have the intellect to decide how to build the organization and how to have the dream about what it's going to be and how to have enough sense to make the dream real. And so a few years ago, I was saying to my buddies, we ought to build this automobile that the blind can drive. And my buddy said, And they thought, well, you're the president, I guess. And they thought, you know, Maurer tries a lot of stuff. I wonder if this has any relevance to reality. And they thought, well, we might as well give it a try. That's what they thought, a lot of them. They didn't say that to me. But they were willing to give it a try, but they didn't know whether or not it had any structure behind it that would make it come true. So then we went to the trouble of trying to do it. And what you have to have, I said to the guys, I said, you know, driving an automobile, everybody says this is a visual thing. And I'll tell you, the way we do it today is pretty visual. You sit in a car and you look out the window and you gather information and you make judgments about what's out there and you decide whether or not you're going to manipulate the instruments of the machine based upon what you see. But you don't have to do it visually. You can do it without vision. At least I think you can do it without vision, and I don't think you have to have the visual experience. Because we manipulate lots more complicated instruments than automobiles every day. I mean, how many controls have you got? Effectively, you've got a steering wheel, and you got a gas pedal and a brake, and maybe if you use the complicated one, a clutch or something. But you don't have very many controls. And so if you can get the information you need and find a way to interpret that information, you can manage these very simple controls that are in the automobile. And at one time when the automobile was new, you had a class of people who operated it, and they were called chauffeurs, and they were specialists. They were experts, and you didn't want anybody to operate your automobile except the chauffeur, because the chauffeur knew what to do and was good at it. Now, everybody does it. I mean, you take the guy who's a high school dropout. Can that guy get a license? Sure. All you got to do is go through a 6-week course at a school, and they'll take anybody. What kind of complexity is this? How difficult is it to manage this technology? I know that if you do it wrong, you'll kill yourself and maybe somebody else. And yet, we let most anybody have at it. And besides, all of the accidents that have happened have been caused by sighted people. So let's let blind people have a shot. Because if we can figure out how to do it, this thing will work. And we did it, and it did. Now, we don't expect to build very many of these things. Because the sales process of getting them on the road is enormously difficult. And there's a simpler solution out there that we can use. This is the automated vehicle, the autonomous vehicle, you know. And all we have to do is make sure that people believe that the autonomous vehicle isn't going to kill you, and that blind people have as much right to operate it as anybody else. And the operating system is going to be, in one sense, simpler to use, and in one sense, much more complicated than the current ones we've got. So we decided we were going to do this. Now, we decided we were going to do it, and it succeeded. Not everything I've tried has succeeded. So when we start trying things that are different, I always figure that I've got to write the press release for the time when it fails, and especially if it fails spectacularly. And I thought, we might have to write a press release if this thing fails spectacularly, but I don't want to do that. And so I started thinking up ways that we could explain it in case it didn't work. And furthermore, the engineers, they came and they said, you know, you need somebody who's sighted, who used to be sighted, who knows how to drive to do this. And I said, how do you know? And they said, well, they have experience and they have background. They'll know how to manage in this situation. I said, maybe the people who used to be sighted will get into the car and they'll be so worried because they can't look out the window that they'll be completely befuddled by this thought, and they won't know what to do because they won't trust the technology they have on their hands. So maybe you need somebody that's never driven an automobile. And in order to find out, we had a class. And we put blind people who used to drive, who used to be sighted, in the class, and we put blind people who didn't know how to drive in the class, who'd never driven and had always been blind in the class, and we tested them against each other. And we found out it doesn't really seem to matter. What matters is whether or not you've got people who are young with good reflexes and can respond quickly, and if you can get those people, then you'll have decent drivers, and if you can't, then you can't. So, and I was not the best driver, so I didn't get the chance to show the thing off. Too bad. No, it's all right. I wanted the project to work. I didn't care very much about who drove the car. Yeah. I've I wanted a show place, you know. So we put this thing on the Daytona International Speedway, and we got lots and lots of publicity about it. So it was a success, no matter that it cost us over $1 million, because we got almost 1 billion hits in the press about it in the course of a year, and it's the best press year we've ever had. So... So what I'm telling you is this. NFB philosophy says we run our own gig. NFB philosophy says if we decide we want to try something new, we figure out how to get it and we do it. NFB philosophy says we are in charge. Now, does it mean we're in charge of everything? That depends on how you look at it. Are we in charge of the Army? Not so far. Are we going to be in charge of the Army to get blind people into the Army who want to serve?
Yes, sir.
Why, I think we have a better shot at it than anybody else in the Army does. They don't believe in the proposition. We do. So we're in charge of that, whether the Army believes it or not. And once we get it done, the Army will think, well, that was interesting. And they'll think, what happened to us? But they'll do it. Because we'll tell them they've got to do it. And we'll tell other people that blind people want to be heroes and they want to be part of the idea of building an opportunity to support your nation just as much as sighted people do. So that guy who was talked into going into the Army, you know, by the recruiter, said, I don't know whether you're man enough. This is what you'd call an old technique. And not one that's unfamiliar. We've seen this before. And you see, are blind people, men and women, enough? Why, sure. If they want to do it. You want to join? Not me. The time for that's over from my point of view. I went to a gathering of generals. Because there are gatherings of generals. They do a lot in the acquisition of stuff for the Army, and so there are a bunch of generals who get together and colonels and whatnot. And I said to them, you know, I did volunteer to serve, and you guys turned me down, and I've been trying to get over that, and I don't hold any resentment very much anyway. I said, you got to keep in mind that there's talent among blind people, and we want to use this talent to support our nation, some of us. And so I'm not giving up this idea that we have as much right to serve as anybody else has. And are we in charge of, say, Microsoft? Well, no, not in one sense. But Microsoft technology has access built into it now that it never would have had without us. We caused that to happen. So in that case, we were in charge of Microsoft to that extent. And are we in charge of other things like that? Well, on the subject of blindness, we know more about it than anybody else. So we're going to help them know that we ought to be there. We have a right to be there. And when they know that we have a right to be there and when they welcome us, then the whole country will be better off, including them. This is what we do. And it's our right to make these decisions. It's your right and my right to decide that we're going to go places and make change. And nobody can keep us from doing it. Now, is it easy? Well, you heard from Caitlin today. It was easier in her case than it has been in the case of some others who were in different areas earlier. Did we lose sometimes when we're talking about
yes.
High-stakes testing? And the answer is, of course, we did. Have we won sometimes in the area of high-stakes testing? Yes. Probably we've won in the Bar Association now. We've had 4 cases, and we've won 3 of them, or 5 cases, and we've won 4. I've forgotten now. But the likelihood that we have to win that case again is probably over. I don't think we have to win that case again because we've won so much and it's cost the Bar Association so much. It's cost well over $1 million for them to lose all those cases. And do I feel sorry for them? No, not that much. Did I cause them the $1 million? Well, that depends on how you look at it. Had they said yes to us before, it wouldn't have cost them $1 million. So they charged themselves all this money because they wouldn't let us in. And it isn't that there aren't any blind lawyers around. Haven't they noticed that there are some? And if there are some blind lawyers around, shouldn't we expect to have some blind people doing what Caitlin does? And maybe being chiropractors and stuff like that? We've won the chiropractor case recently, and we had so much high-stakes testing is now being... They just say, well, you know, you can't make it accessible. We're sorry. We'd really like to, but it's impossible. Well, it's impossible because you built it so that it would be impossible. Don't tell me that. I know that ones and zeros get made into Braille as much as they get made into print, and that's what machine language is. So I'm not buying this idea that you can't do it. Can't doesn't mean the same thing to me that it does to you. And that's part of NFB philosophy. We make up our own minds about what we're going to do, and we take on the challenges we want. And it's our right to do that. So, what else is in there? Well, it seems to me that the kind of thing that says we're going to have a successful system of demonstrating our capacity, we're going to believe in each other, and we're going to support each other and work with each other is basic to what we do. Now, there are lots of people who get mixed up about NFB philosophy, and I want to talk about that just for a second, and then if there are questions or comments, we'll go there. Some people say that to be a good Federationist, are you all good Federation? Are you really good Federation? Now, to be a good Federationist, you've got to be able to read Braille. Is that the case? Ron Brown, is that the case? Ron Brown denies it. He said, you don't have to read Braille to be a good Federationist. Ron, if you can read Braille really well, are you a good Federationist? Is that what it takes, Ron? He says, not a chance. And to be a good Federationist, you got to be able to travel with a cane independently anywhere you want to go and never ask anybody for any help. No, I don't believe that either. I've asked a lot of people for a lot of help in my lifetime. And if you want to get down to it, you know, you can compare yourself to certain sighted people in the world and find out which of them has ever asked anybody for help. You know, guys don't ask for help, do they? Some of them don't, but most of them do. And the ones who don't, they stay lost longer. So you don't have to read Braille, and you don't have to use a cane to be a good Federationist. What you do have to do is believe that you have the capacity to communicate, and you have to find ways to do it. And you have to know that you have the chance to be independent, and you have to find ways to do that, whether it is to use a cane or to use a dog or to use a system that lets you communicate with somebody else, some of these new systems that are electronic that you can stick on and wear them so that you can walk around and talk to somebody, or the ones that let you take somebody with you and hold on to a person's arm and let that person show you where you're going. If it's your choice, this is the thing that matters. If what you're doing is finding a way for you to decide how to express your independence, this is what matters. If somebody else is running your life for you, then you got to wonder whether you should change your mind, because the NFB philosophy says your choice about your life is your choice and not somebody else's choice. Now, everybody makes choices based upon what's available. So, in order to have a good NFB life, supposing that you decide you'd like to get married. You know, some of us have been married. Some of us stay that way. Do you always make up your own mind about what you're going to do? Well, sometimes you talk to the others in your life, don't you know? And you work out what's best for the group, because independence doesn't mean that you're going to decide everything for everybody all the time, and you're always going to direct what's going to happen. Sometimes you're going to work with somebody else in the decision-making about the direction. And maybe quite a bit of the time. But you're going to make up your mind based upon your mind and your independence. That's what the NFB philosophy is about.